You're tuned to 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus from New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at WICN.org. Good evening. I'm Al Voner, and this is The Public Eye. Nice to have you with us. I'm sure if we got a chance to talk to every one of you, my sense would be that everybody has a passion, a sideline, a hobby, something that they truly enjoy, something that kind of takes the edge off of a tough day or a tough week, some place that we can just go and do something that really brings peace to our minds. Some people call it a hobby. Other people, as I said, just consider it a passion. But I think it's very important and something that really makes us who we are as human beings. And that's why I've had my guest on this week, this Aaron Hauvia. Aaron is a professor of marketing at the University of Michigan in Dearborn, a keynote speaker, and the author of the new book, The Things We Love. And he'll be talking about how our passions, the things that really ground us very often in our lives, connect us and make us who we are. Aaron, nice to have you with us.
Al, thank you so much for having me.
I love the topic because I, you and I talk a little bit before broadcast. I don't think that there's anybody who walks the face of the earth that doesn't have something. And I don't care whether you're a gourmet chef, a stamp collector, a coin collector, someone that loves wine like myself, maybe, a great book every now and then, something that grounds us, something that makes us forget about the trials and tribulations, if you will, in the course of a given day or a given week. So I got to get the sense that you too felt this way in writing the book. Is there something that in your own personal life was inspiration for writing the book?
I'll tell you how the book got started. I've always been curious about these topics. My undergraduate degree is actually in philosophy. I had a lot of interest in how it affected people to live in a consumer society, issues around materialism and how materialism affected our lives. And I ended up in a PhD program in marketing at Northwestern, in part because I was interested in marketing, partly because I find it really just a fascinating topic, and it's something that plays an important role in our society, and partly because I wanted to understand its impact on consumers and its impact on our culture. And that was a chance to really study it and get an inside view on what was going on. So a lot of my passion has been around sort of this question about materialism and how it affects our lives. And that is something that has been a defining interest of mine for my whole life. Although getting at this sort of angle of love has kind of a quirky story behind it.
Well, the interesting thing here, and I couldn't agree with you more, is the fact that there are people who take their passions, their hobbies to the extreme. We all know a hoarder, someone that just collects endless, whatever it may be, as I said, stamps, coins. But for the most part, and I think you would agree, and I think as you were talking, having something that grounds us, having this pure passion, something that brings really joy into our lives, whether you're utilizing it on a daily basis, a weekly basis, or otherwise, helps keep us, for lack of a better way of putting it, kind of keeping us sane, right?
Yeah, it does. And one of the things that I've learned and sort of has changed about my attitudes is I went into this, as I said, with sort of a philosophy background and very skeptical. And I remain very skeptical to this day, but I also remain much, much more appreciative. I've really understood in my own life and other people's life the positive roles that objects, things we own, things we make ourselves, places that we love, activities that we love, really how this helps us find meaning in our life and helps us connect to other people. That what I've discovered is that the deep source of meaning in people's life is, as I sort of always suspected, is your relationships with other people. That's what people find meaningful, find powerful, and really matters to people at the end of the day. However, I used to think of objects and sort of materialism, as I would have you formerly framed it, as just this bad thing that distracts you or what, you know, has some deleterious effects. And what I've really learned through many years of research is that that can happen. There are dark sides, there are negative sides to some of this stuff, but for the most part, the things we love, like objects that we love in our life, really connect us to other people. They don't separate us from other people. And the reason that we love them is because of these connections. And if you look, and there was some very early work on this by Rochberg Halton, a sociologist, and his dissertation advisor, who became very famous later, a guy named Csikszentmihalyi, who did the work on flow. And in this very early work, they were looking at, you know, people and objects that these people really loved, and discovered that the people who had the most friendships and the most close relationships with their family had the most objects that they loved, and the people who had the most impoverished social lives also had the fewest things or objects in their life that they loved. And the reason for this is that most of the objects that people loved were things like, oh, it's a photograph of me with my kids, or it's this gift that my friend gave to me that reminds me of our relationship. And if you have those relationships, then you have objects that signify and remind you of those relationships. If you don't have the relationships with the people, you don't have the relationships with the objects either. Yeah. And so they really support each other mostly, not every time, but they really support each other more than they compete with each other.
I think it's a great point. I mean, I get this. I'm not a golfer. It'd be very, you know, the last person you want to see on a green is me, but that's beside the point. Just a couple of neighbors who have been golfing together since they were out of college, and I'm going back now 20, 30 years. You know, same thing with women getting together, whether it's a sport. As you said, though, it's a time to bond. I mean, yeah, there's those opportunities, and there are those passions that perhaps are more singular. In other words, don't need to have a large crowd. But for the most part, it does bring people together. And I've got to assume, and I want to get your sense on this, that if we were a society that did nothing more than and almost be robotic in nature, go to work, come home, you know, do your errands, cook your meals, and then go to bed, it would be a very boring life. So as human beings, to stay grounded, and as you said, to have a social life, to be emotionally attached to other people, and I don't mean necessarily in a love relationship, just having somebody or a group of people that you truly enjoy being around and you're there for one another, that these passions are really the link, right?
Very often, yeah. So the passions really get their power and their meaning, because you got to understand what I'm talking about with people. If I ask someone, is there anything that you love? And it could be an object, it could be an activity, it could be a place, just so long as it isn't a person, anything that isn't a person that you love. The answers that people come up with are things that really matter to them. They're deep connections. They feel important to the person at a sort of a profound level. And the reason things feel important to people that way is twofold. And one of them that we've been mentioning is because it connects them to other people. And it's really the other people that are what creates the importance. So in some ways, it's kind of like the light of the moon, which is bright and beautiful, but it's always really just the reflected light of the sun. Well, in this analogy, our relationships with other people is the sun, and our relationships with objects is the moon. So it's beautiful, that these objects to look at, but it's really they get their power by reflecting this other light of these social relationships.
Yeah.
The people we do the activity with, or the people that the activity reminds us of, or the object reminds us of, or it's a memento from them, or a gift from them, or something along those lines. Yeah. The other thing that happens, though, where these objects or activities get their emotional power, is because we all need to define our own identity, our sense of who we are. And that's not historically always been the case to the same degree. So in most past human societies, your identity was given to you by the circumstances of your birth. You're born into a certain family, you were a certain gender, you were a certain social class, your family had a job that you went into, your family had a religion that you would believe. And so your identity was sort of handed to you for the most part. Today, we have a really nice position, which is that we get to make a lot of those choices. You know, we don't live the same village we were born into. We could move anywhere. We choose our own friends. They're not just our neighbors. We choose our own religion to an amazing extent, at least in the United States. People go from one religion to another or to no religion or back or have they go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and our politics is something we choose and our job is something that we choose. And so we have all this freedom about what we're going to do. But the downside of that is that, well, now we have to make all those choices, right? Yeah, we get to make the choices, but we also have to make the choices.
Right.
And with all of that personal freedom, we have to figure out, we want to make those choices to create a person, to be a certain type of person. And so those things around identity also give objects and activities a lot of meaning. And many times when people love a hobby, it's a combination of the activity itself is definitely enjoyable, but also I like being this kind of person. Like if my hobby is cooking, which is for me, it's one of my hobbies, I find cooking enjoyable. I like eating a lot, but I also find like I'm happy to be a person who is good at cooking.
Mm.
That's an identity that I'm proud of and that I feel good about.
Yeah.
So we're simultaneously finding things that we enjoy, but also things that help us be the person we want to be.
Right. It's interesting because I too love to eat, but I am a horrible cook, so I fail on that front. I want to just take a quick pause to remind listeners that you're tuned to 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus for New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at WICN.org. I'm Al Voner, and this is this week's edition of The Public Eye. My guest this week is Aaron Hovia, professor of management and marketing at the University of Michigan in Dearborn, a keynote speaker and the author of the new book, The Things We Love, How Our Passions Connect Us and Make Us Who We Are. Aaron, that's very interesting because I know people who didn't necessarily grow up in a very loving or nurturing environment, and I guess that carries its own, you know, that carries its own burdens, and everybody deals with it differently. But in some of those cases, it was indeed, as you said, a passion, a hobby, something that grounded them, something that took them away or gave them, gave them that solace, gave them that meaning, especially if they could share it with other people. So it does go back that it, you know, sometimes these passions, these hobbies are more often than not, I should say, really define who we are and help make us, am I stretching it a little bit to say that actually make us a better person?
They absolutely can. They don't always, but they have that potential, right? Because if you think about personal growth, that's what's sort of, the idea behind the phrase personal growth is that you're striving to become a better person, more knowledgeable, more ethical, more skilled in some way, you know, or have more mental self-control or more mental peace in some way. So a lot of these things that we do, we resonate with them. You find something and it clicks with you. You're like, oh, you do something for the first time and it just sort of feels right to you. There's a sense that it feels right to you because it fits with your identity much of the time, or that's how you discover what your identity is. Oh, I guess I'm a person who likes this thing, right? I didn't think I would like woodworking, but I seem to really enjoy woodworking. I guess I'm a woodworker and never really knew that about myself.
Right.
And with everything that you take on, if you pursue it, you can build skills and build knowledge, and that helps you grow as a person, which is a kind of self-improvement.
Yeah. I want to move over to the arena of gender. Does one sex do a better job? I mean, I've heard since I was a kid that women are always more social. That they love to get together with other, you know, other women, girlfriends. They're there to support one another. In many cases, that's certainly true. And then you hear that, well, you know, guys are more apt to be, you know, on their own, more of a loner. I don't necessarily think that's always the case. In fact, I know it's not. But is it likely that maybe women would be more likely to develop a passion, an interest, a hobby, and roll that over into a social context more so than males?
Here I'm going on a little bit more my general knowledge and observation. I haven't specifically studied this, but I can tell you from many, many years of research in this area that, well, we know from the research on loneliness that men tend to be, or a higher percentage of the male population is lonely than it is true for the female population. So loneliness is somewhat, it's a problem for everybody in our society, or all segments of our society, I should say, but it's more of a problem among men. So that is certainly true. Men, however, are more likely than women to bond over activities and objects. Women are a little bit better in our society at just sitting down and talking about, you know, without any sort of activity as an intermediary, whereas it's a little more common for guys that if you want to talk, maybe you go play golf with somebody,
right,
or maybe you watch a football game with this person, or you have something that you both have in common that you love that's acting sort of as a connector and supports the relationship. That's also true for women. Women do that all the time as well, but it's a little bit more common for guys.
Yeah, yeah. And I have to agree with the part on the women not necessarily needing to bring any particular item or topic into a group, just in general, whether it be motherhood or, you know, how's your day been, or haven't seen you in a while, and all of a sudden it develops into this, you know, an hour goes by, a couple hours go by, and they've bonded, and they've kind of caught up with each other, and that's been a very fulfilling scenario for many, many, many of them. In your research for the book, did you have the opportunity to actually sit down with individuals and ask them directly, what do you enjoy to do when it's been a stressful day, or you know, when you feel that sense of loneliness and you want some connectivity? Did you have the opportunity to sit with people, and did you find it? If so, did you find it insightful?
Yeah, my research has two aspects. I do some things using surveys, but even when I started working in this area, that was 30 years ago, the very first thing I did was sit down with people and do depth interviews. So I would go into their home and I would ask them about, well, is there anything that you love? And we would just talk about the things that they love, the activities, the objects, what have you, that they loved. And people love to talk about things they love. Like if you ask someone about their kids, right, they love their kids, they will just talk your ear off about their kids. And if you get someone, you're like, oh, you really love chess? Tell me about chess. Man, they will talk your ear off, which is good for me. I like that.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
That was, you know, it made it very easy to do the research because people were really happy to talk. Usually people have a hard time finding people who are willing to participate in their research. But everyone that I would talk to, when they were done, they'd be like, oh, this has been the best. Often these interviews could go on for hours.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
This has been the best 2.5 hours I've had in years. Like, someone just wants to sit and listen to me. And I'd say, do you know anybody else you think I should talk to? And they'd be like, oh, all of my best friends would love to talk with you because it's so much fun. So they don't, and you're going to, you know, I don't even, you're not even charging me like a psychologist would charge me for this. Now you do this for free. So yeah, I've had a lot of chance to do, to talk with people. And in this way, and there's some things that come out of those interviews that I find really interesting, because it's very consistent that I don't need to tell people my insights. They arrive at the same place just by talking for this long. So when they're done with talking with me for, you know, sometimes an hour, sometimes 4 hours, whatever it might be, they often will say two things. One will say, you know, I never thought about it before, but everything I love, it's all part of who I am. These are all things that maybe they connect to my history growing up, and they're part of my past and part of my life story in that way. Or maybe they connect to my future and the person I want to be, and I'm striving to be this other person, and they connect to me in that way. They're all things that are part of my identity, and most of them are things that connect me to other people. Maybe it's someone directly that I know, like a friend or a family member who I did this activity with. We do it together. or, you know, again, who, you know, I love this piece of artwork that they gave me and it reminds me of them. And there's that connection and that story there. Or maybe it's a group of people. Maybe it just reminds me of my heritage or my ancestors as a group. Or maybe it connects me with, you know, Apple as a brand has done an amazing job of this. It's a little bit less true than it used to be some years ago, but it used to be like if you used Apple, it really said you were a certain type of person.
Mm-hmm.
And Apple is, in my research, the most loved brand in America.
Mm,
and a lot of that is that people like that identity, that the type of person that they associate Apple with is the type of person they want to be.
Yeah.
And so they really, one of the things they get from that is a connecting both to that sort of identity, but also connecting to the other people
right.
who share that identity with them. And I used to think Apple just sort of lucked into this. But I've learned that Apple has been very interested. A lot of my research is from a marketing perspective in what's called brand love. That's a term that I introduced more or less to the literature many years ago. And Apple has been studying this very intentionally. You know, what does it mean to love a brand or love a product? And how do we get people to love our product?
Yeah.
And it's really paid off for them.
Oh, I would say.
in the ability that people really do love Apple quite a bit.
I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, when they relate to a brand, they believe in it. They're satisfied with the product or the service. They love the people behind it. And again, it all goes back to what you said. Now, we've only got a few seconds left, but I want to just wrap it up by saying that the essence of all of this, Aaron, is connectivity, is it not?
Absolutely. The phrase that I use in the book is person, thing, person. So it's not just a relationship between you and, say, your cell phone, but it's a relationship between you, your cell phone, and all the people you text on
right.
your cell phone.
Right.
So in that case, the connection is very instrumental, like the cell phone really obviously helps you connect.
Right.
Sometimes the connection is symbolic. It's me, a gift I received from a person, and then the person who gave me the gift.
Sure.
And so it connects me in a symbolic way. Yeah. But it's all about this kind of interconnectivity and the way objects connect us to other people, as well as connecting us to our own identity.
In spite of the, you know, the title of the book is The Things We Love, but, you know, and I urge people to go out and buy the book because it is a great read because it helps you to focus, as Aaron's been talking about, on connectivity, but also who we are as people. So you could also call it the things and the people we love because there is that, as Aaron's been talking about, the interconnectivity. Aaron, real quickly, before we close out, if people want to pose questions to you, just get more information about the research that you've been doing, ongoing research that you've been doing, other projects you may be working on, how may they do that?
You can find me at my website, thethingsweLove.com. I also have a blog through Psychology Today. And if you're interested in that, you can sign up at my website. So go to thethingsweLove.com and you'll see a place there to stick in your email address.
Great.
And I'll get you hooked up with the blog and keep you up to date.
Well, Aaron's left the door open, so it's up to listeners now to follow through on that. Again, the book is The Things We Love, How Our Passions Connect Us and Make Us Who We Are. So true. So very, very true. Any questions about the broadcast, you can certainly give us a call here at the studios at WICN. Our main number is 508-752-0700. You can pose any comments, questions, or feedback to me directly. I always welcome that. That's Al Vona, V-U-O-N-A, at WICN.org. Again, I want to thank my guests this week, Aaron Ahuvia, professor of marketing at the University of Michigan and author of the new book, The Things We Love. For the public eye, this is Al Vona.